signs interspersed in a predictable pattern. Each had a newish car in the driveway and evidence of children. Small bicycles with stabilisers, a basketball hoop fixed to the garage wall. But there was neither sight nor sound of any. The streets were all named after poets. Wordsworth Lane, Shelley Close, Keats Rise. No doubt chosen by the building company's marketing department. They were all poets that the kind of person who'd aspired to such a home would recognise. Poets who wrote about urns and flowers and wandering clouds. Based on past experience, I'd be more likely to end up living in Dante Lane or Poe Crescent. I was very familiar with such environs, having lived in several virtually identical houses and virtually identical streets during foster placements. There would be no pensioners here, no friends sharing a house, and no one living alone, save for the occasional transitory divorcee. Newish cars lined up in driveways, two per house, ideally. Families came and went, and the whole place felt temporary somehow, like theatrical scenery that had been hastily assembled and could be shifted at any time. I shuddered, chasing away the memories. Raymond's mother lived in a neat terrace behind the newer houses, a row of tiny pebble-dashed semis. It was social housing. The streets here were named after obscure local politicians. Those who had purchased their homes had fitted UPVC double-glazed front doors or added little porches. Raymond's family homestead was unmodified. Raymond ignored the front door and walked around the side of the house. The back garden had a shed with net curtains in the window and a square of green lawn marked by clothes poles. Washing flapped on the line, pegged out with military precision, a row of plain white sheets and towels, and then a line of alarming elasticated undergarments. There was a vegetable patch with tropically lush rhubarb and neat rows of carrots, leeks and cabbages. I admired the symmetry and precision with which they had been laid out. Raymond pushed open the back door without knocking, shouting hello as he walked into the little kitchen. It smelled deliciously of soup, salty and warm, probably emanating from the large pot that sat on the hob. The floor and all the surfaces were immaculately clean and tidy, and I felt certain that were I to open a drawer or cupboard, everything inside would be pristine and neatly arranged. The decor was plain and functional, but with occasional flashes of kitsch. There was a large calendar with a lurid photograph of two kittens in a basket, and a cloth tube to store plastic bags, and designed to resemble an old-fashioned doll hung on a door handle. A single cup, glass and plate was stacked on the drainer. We walked into a tiny hall, and I followed Raymond into the living room, which again was spotless and reeked of furniture polish. A vase of chrysanthemums sat on the window ledge, and an uncurated jumble of framed photographs and ornaments were protected by the smoked glass doors of an outmoded dresser like holy relics. An old woman in an armchair reached forward for a remote to mute an enormous television. It was showing that programme where people take old things to be valued, and then, if it turns out that they are worth something, pretend they like them too much to sell them. Three cats lounged on the sofa. Two glared at us, the third merely opened one eye and then went back to sleep, not deigning us worthy of a response.
"Raymond's son, come in, come in," the old woman said, pointing to the sofa and leaning forward in her chair to shoo the creatures off.
"I've brought a friend from work, Mum, hope that's okay," he said, walking forward and kissing her on the cheek.
I stepped forward and held out my hand. "Eleanor Oliphant, pleased to meet you," I said. She took my hand, then clasped it in both of hers, much as Sammy had done.
"Lovely to see you, hen," she said. "I'm always pleased to meet Raymond's friends. Sit down, won't you? You'll be needing a cup of tea, I'm sure. What you taking it?"
She made to stand, and I noticed the wheeled walking frame by the side of the chair.
"Stay where you are, Mum, I'll get it," Raymond said. "Shall I make us all a nice cuppa?"
"Oh, that'd be lovely, son," she said. There's some biscuits too. Wagon wheels, your favourites.
Raymond went off to the kitchen and I sat on the sofa to the right of his mother.
He's a good boy, my Raymond, she said proudly.
I was unsure how best to respond and opted for a short nod.
So you work together, she said. You fix computers too. Oh, my goodness, girls can do just about anything these days, can't they?
She was as neat and tidy as her house, a blouse fastened at the neck with a pearl brooch. She wore wine-coloured velvet slippers with a sheepskin trim which looked cosy. She was in her 70s, I'd guess, and I noticed when I shook her hand that her knuckles were swollen to the size of gooseberries. I work in accounts, Mrs. Gibbons, I said. I told her a bit about my job and she appeared to be fascinated, nodding along and occasionally saying,
Is that right? And, my, my, isn't that interesting?
When I ended my monologue, having exhausted the already limited conversational opportunities afforded by accounts receivable, she smiled.
Are you local, Eleanor?
She asked gently. Usually I abhor being questioned in this manner, but it was clear that her interest was genuine and without malice, so I told her where I lived, being deliberately vague as to the precise location. One should never disclose one's exact place of residence to strangers.
You don't have the accent, though?
She said, framing it as another question. I spent my early childhood down south, I said, but I moved to Scotland when I was 10.
Ah, she said, that explains it.
She seemed happy with this. I've noticed that most Scottish people don't inquire beyond down south, and I can only assume that this description encapsulates some sort of generic Englandshire for them, boat races and bowler hats, as though Liverpool and Cornwall were the same sorts of places inhabited by the same sorts of people. Conversely, they're always adamant that every part of their own country is unique and special. I'm not sure why. Raymond returned with the tea things and a packet of wagon wheels on a garish plastic tray.
Raymond, his mother said, you might have put the milk into a jug for heaven's sake. We've got a guest.
It's only Eleanor, Mum, he said, then looked at me. You don't mind, do you?
Not at all, I said. I always use the carton at home too. It's merely a vessel from which to convey the liquid into the cup. In fact, it's probably more hygienic than using an uncovered jug, I would have thought. I reached forward for a wagon wheel. Raymond was already chewing on his. The pair of them chatted about inconsequential matters and I settled into the sofa. Neither of them had particularly strident voices and I listened to the carriage clock on the mantelpiece tick loudly. It was warm, just on the right side of oppressively hot. One of the cats, lying on its side in front of the fire, stretched out to its full length with a shudder and then went back to sleep. There was a photograph next to the clock, the colours muted with age. A man, obviously Raymond's father, grinned broadly at the camera, holding up a champagne flute in a toast.
That's Raymond's dad, his mother said, noticing.
She smiled.
That was taken the day Raymond got his exam results.
She looked at him with obvious pride.
Our Raymond was the first one in the family to go to university, she said. His dad was pleased as punch. I only wish he could have been there for your graduation. What a day that was, eh, Raymond, son?
Raymond smiled, nodded.
He had a heart attack not long after I started uni, he explained to me.
Never got to enjoy his retirement, his mother said. It often happens that way.
They both sat quietly for a moment.
What did he do for a living?
I asked. I wasn't interested, but I felt it was appropriate.
Gas engineer, Raymond said.
His mother nodded.
He worked hard all his days, she said, and we never wanted for anything, did we, Raymond? We had a holiday every year in a nice wee car. At least he got to see our Denise married anyway, that's something.
I must have looked puzzled.
My sister, Raymond explained.
Oh, for goodness sake, Raymond. Too busy talking about football and computers, no doubt. And I don't suppose she wants to hear about that sort of thing anyway. Boys, hey, Eleanor.
She shook her head at me, smiling. This was puzzling. How on earth could you forget that you had a sister? He hadn't forgotten, I supposed. He'd simply taken his sibling for granted. An unchanging, unremarkable fact of life, not even worthy of mention. It was impossible for me to imagine such a scenario, alone as I was. Only Mummy and I inhabit the Oliphant world. His mother was still talking.
Denise was 11 when Raymond came along. A wee surprise and a blessing, so he was.
She looked at him with so much love that I had to turn away. At least I know what love looks like, I told myself. That's something. No one had ever looked at me like that, but I'd be able to recognise it if they ever did.
Dear son, get the album out. I'll show Eleanor those photos of that first holiday in Alicante, the summer before you started school. He got stuck in a revolving door at the airport, she said, sotto voce, leaning towards me confidentially.
I laughed out loud at the look of utter horror on Raymond's face. Mum, Eleanor doesn't want to be bored to death looking at our old photos, he said, blushing in a way that I suppose some people might consider charming. I thought for a moment about insisting that I'd love to see them, but he looked so miserable that I couldn't do it. Conveniently, my stomach gave a loud rumble. I'd only had the wagon wheel since my lunchtime repast of spaghetti hoops on toast. She coughed politely.
You'll stay for your tea, won't you, Eleanor? It's nothing fancy, but you're very welcome.
I looked at my watch. It was only 5:30, an odd time to eat, but I was hungry and it would still allow me time to go to Tesco on the way home. I'd be delighted, Mrs. Gibbons, I said. We sat around the small table in the kitchen. The soup was delicious. She said she'd used a pork knuckle to make stock and then shredded the meat through the soup, which was also full of vegetables from the garden. There was bread and butter and cheese, and afterwards we had a cup of tea and a cream cake. All the while, Mrs. Gibbons regaled us with tales of her neighbours' various eccentricities and illnesses, along with updates on the activities of their extended family, which seemed to be of as little relevance to Raymond as they were to me, judging by his expression. He teased his mother frequently and affectionately, and she responded with mock annoyance, gently slapping him on the arm or chiding him for his rudeness. I was warm and full and comfortable in a way I couldn't remember feeling before. Raymond's mother heaved herself to her feet and reached for her walking frame. She had crippling arthritis in her knees and hips, Raymond told me, while she hobbled upstairs to the bathroom. The house wasn't really suitable for someone with limited mobility, but she refused to move, he said, because she'd lived all her adult life there, and it was the place where she'd brought up her family.
Now then, she said, returning from upstairs, I'll wash these few dishes and then we can settle down and watch a bit of telly.
Raymond got straight to his feet. Sit down, Mum, let me do it. Won't take a minute. Eleanor will help me, won't you, Eleanor? I stood up and began gathering up the plates. Mrs. Gibbons protested vehemently, but eventually sat back down in her chair, slow and awkward, and I heard a tiny sigh of pain. Raymond washed and I dried. This was his suggestion. Somehow he'd noticed my red, sore hands, although he didn't make a hullabaloo about it. He'd merely nudged me away from the sink and thrust a tea towel, a rather jaunty one with a Scotty dog sporting a tartan bow tie, into my damaged fingers. The tea towel was soft and fibrous, as though it had been washed many times over and had been ironed carefully into a neatly pressed square. I cast an eye over the plates before stacking them on the table for Raymond to put away. The crockery was old but good quality, painted with blousy roses and edged in faded gilt. Mrs. Gibbons saw me looking at it. There was certainly nothing wrong with her powers of observation.
That was my wedding china, Eleanor, she said. Imagine still going strong almost 50 years later.
You are the china,
Raymond said, and she tutted and shook her head, smiling. There was a comfortable silence as we worked on our respective tasks.
Tell me, are you courting at the moment, Eleanor?
She asked.
How tedious.
Not presently, I said, but I have my eye on someone. It's only a matter of time.
There was a crash from the sink as Raymond dropped the ladle onto the draining board with a clatter.
Raymond, his mum said. Butterfingers.
I'd been keeping track of the musician online, of course, but he'd been rather quiet, virtually speaking. A couple of Instagram snaps of some meals he'd had, a few tweets, uninteresting Facebook updates about other people's music. I didn't mind. It was merely a matter of biding my time. If I knew one thing about romance, it was that the perfect moment for us to meet and fall in love would arrive when I least expected it, and in the most charming set of circumstances. That said, if it didn't happen soon, I'd need to take matters into my own hands.
And what about your family? She said. Do they live close by? Any brothers or sisters?
No, unfortunately, I said. I would have loved to have had siblings to grow up with. I thought about this. It's actually one of the greatest sources of sadness in my life, I heard myself say. I had never uttered such a sentence before, and indeed hadn't even fully formed the thought until this very moment. I surprised myself.
And whose fault is that, then?
A voice whispering in my ear, cold and sharp, angry. Mummy. I closed my eyes, trying to be rid of her. Mrs. Gibbon seemed to sense my discomfort.
Oh, I'm sure that must mean you've got a lovely, close relationship with your mum and dad, then. I bet you mean the world to them, being the only one.
I looked at my shoes. Why had I selected them? I couldn't remember. They had Velcro fastenings for ease of use, and they were black, which went with everything. They were flat for comfort and built up around the ankle for support. They were, I realised, hideous.
Don't be so nosy, Mum, Raymond said, drying his hands on the tea towel. You're like the Gestapo.
I thought she'd be angry, but it was worse than that. She was apologetic.
Oh, Eleanor, I'm sorry, love. I didn't mean to upset you. Please, hen, don't cry. I'm so sorry.
I was crying. Sobbing. I hadn't cried so extravagantly for years. I tried to remember the last time. It was after Declan and I split up. Even then, those weren't emotional tears. I was crying with pain because he'd broken my arm and two ribs when I'd finally asked him to move out.
This simply wasn't on. Sobbing in the kitchen of a colleague's mother, whatever would Mummy say?
I pulled myself together.
Please don't apologise, Mrs. Gibbons, I said, my voice croaking and then splitting like a teenage boy's as I tried to calm my breath, wiping my eyes on the tea towel. She was literally wringing her hands and looked on the verge of tears herself. Raymond had his arm around her shoulder.
Don't upset yourself, Mum. You didn't mean anything by it. She knows that, don't you, Eleanor?
Yes, of course, I said, and on impulse leaned across and shook her hand.
Your question was both reasonable and appropriate. My response, however, was not. I'm at a loss to explain it. Please accept my apologies if I've made you feel uncomfortable.
She looked relieved.
Thank God for that, hen, she said. I wasn't expecting tears in my kitchen the day.
Aye, it's usually your cooking that makes me cry, Ma, Raymond said, and she laughed quietly. I cleared my throat.
Your question took me unawares, Mrs. Gibbons, I said. I never knew my father, and I know nothing about him, not even his name.
Mummy is currently... Let's just say she's hors de combat.
I received blank looks from both of them. I was clearly not amongst francophones. I don't ever see her. She's...